Side 10, Man and His Symbols, by Carl G. Jung. Continuing with Symbols in an Individual Analysis, on page 296. This dream presents in symbolic language Henry's fear of a responsible relationship with a woman and his tendency to withdraw from the feeling side of life. An old man is breathing his last. He is surrounded by his relatives, and I am among them. More and more people gather in a large room, each one characterizing himself through precise statements. There are a good 40 persons present. The old man groans and mutters about unlived life. His daughter, who wants to make his confession easier, asks him in what sense unlived is to be understood, whether cultural or moral. The old man will not answer. His daughter sends me to a small adjoining room where I am to find the answer by telling a fortune with cards. The 9 that I turn up will give the answer according to the color. I expect to turn up a 9 at the very beginning, but at first I turn up various kings and queens. I am disappointed. Now I turn up nothing but scraps of paper that don't belong to the game at all. Finally, I discover that there are no more cards in the deck, but only envelopes and other pieces of paper. Together with my sister, who is also present, I look everywhere for the cards. Finally, I discover one under a textbook or a notebook. It is 9, a 9 of spades. It seems to me that this can only mean one thing, that it was moral chains that prevented the old man from living his life. The essential message of this strange dream was to warn Henry what awaited him if he failed to live his life. The old man probably represents the dying ruling principle, the principle that rules Henry's consciousness, but whose nature is unknown to him. The 40 people present symbolize the totality of Henry's psychic traits. 40 is a number of totality, an elevated form of the number 4. That the old man is dying could be a sign that part of Henry's male personality is on the verge of a final transformation. The daughter's query about the possible cause of death is the unavoidable and decisive question. There seems to be an implication that the old man's morality has prevented him from living out his natural feelings and drives. Yet the dying man himself is silent. Therefore his daughter, the personification of the mediating feminine principle, the anima, has to become active. She sends Henry to discover the answer from the fortune-telling cards, the answer that will be given by the color of the first 9 turned up. The fortune-telling has to take place in an unused remote room, revealing how far away such a happening is from Henry's conscious attitude. He is disappointed when at first he uncovers only kings and queens, perhaps collective images of his youthful veneration for power and wealth. This disappointment becomes intense when the picture cards run out, for this shows that the symbols of the inner world have also been exhausted. Only scraps of paper are left, without any images. Thus the source of pictures dries up in the dream. Henry then has to accept the help of his feminine side, this time represented by his sister, to find the last card. Together with her, he finally finds a card, the 9 of spades. It is this card that must serve to indicate by its color what the phrase unlived life meant in the dream. And it is significant that the card is hidden under a textbook or notebook, which probably represents the arid intellectual formulas of Henry's technical interests. The 9 has been a magic number for centuries. According to the traditional symbolism of numbers, it represents the perfect form of the perfected Trinity in its threefold elevation. And there are endless other meanings associated with the number 9 in various ages and cultures. The color of the 9 of spades is the color of death and of lifelessness. Also, the spade image strongly brings to mind the form of a leaf, and therefore its blackness emphasizes that instead of being green, vital, and natural, it is now dead. Furthermore, the word spade derives from the Italian spada, which means sword or spear. Such weapons often symbolize the penetrating, cutting function of the intellect. Thus, the dream makes it clear that it was the moral bonds, rather than cultural, that did not allow the old man to live his life. In Henry's case, these bonds probably were his fear of surrendering fully to life, of accepting responsibilities to a woman, and thereby becoming unfaithful to his mother. The dream has declared that the unlived life is an illness of which one can die. Henry could no longer disregard the message of this dream. He realized that one needs something more than reason as a helpful compass in the entanglements of life. It is necessary to seek the guidance of the unconscious powers that emerge as symbols out of the depths of the psyche. With this recognition, the goal of this part of his analysis was reached. He now knew that he was finally expelled from the paradise of an uncommitted life, and that he could never return to it. The final dream. A further dream came to confirm irrevocably the insights Henry had gained. After some unimportant short dreams that concerned his everyday life, the last dream, the 50th in the series, appeared with all the wealth of symbols that characterizes the so-called great dreams. Four of us form a friendly group, and we have the following experiences. Evening. We are sitting at a long, raw lumber table and drinking out of each of three different vessels. From a liqueur glass, a clear, yellow, sweet liqueur. From a wine glass, dark red Campari. From a large, classically shaped vessel, tea. In addition to us, there is also a girl of reserved, delicate nature. She pours her liqueur into the tea. Night. We have returned from a big drinking bout. One of us is the Président de la République Française. We are in his palace. Walking out onto the balcony, we perceive him beneath us in the snowy street, as he, in his drunken condition, urinates against a mound of snow. His bladder content seems to be inexhaustible. Now he even runs after an old spinster who carries in her arms a child wrapped in a brown blanket. He sprays the child with his urine. The spinster feels the moisture but ascribes it to the child. She hurries away with long steps. Morning. Through the street, which glistens in the winter sun, goes a Negro, a gorgeous figure, completely naked. He walks toward the east, toward Bern, that is, the Swiss capital. We are in French Switzerland. We decide to go to pay him a visit. Noon. After a long automobile trip through a lonely, snowy region, we come to a city and into a dark house where the Negro is said to have put up. We are very much afraid that he might be frozen to death. However, his servant, who is just as dark, receives us. Negro and servant are mute. We look into the rucksacks we have brought with us to see what each could give the Negro as a gift. It must be some sort of object characteristic of civilization. I am the first to make up my mind, and I take a package of matches from the floor and offer it to the Negro with deference. After all have presented their gifts, we join with the Negro in a happy feast, a joyous revel. Even at first glance, the dream, with its four parts, makes an unusual impression. It encompasses a whole day and moves toward the right in the direction of growing consciousness. The movement starts with the evening, goes over into the night, and ends at noon, when the sun is at its zenith. Thus, the cycle of the day appears as a totality pattern. In this dream, the four friends seem to symbolize the unfolding masculinity of Henry's psyche, and their progress through the four acts of the dream has a geometric pattern that reminds one of the essential construction of the mandala. As they first came from the east, then from the west, moving on toward the capital of Switzerland, that is, the center, they seem to describe a pattern that tries to unite the opposites in a center. And this point is underlined by the movement in time, the descent into the night of the unconscious, following the sun's circuit, which is followed by an ascent to the bright zenith of consciousness. The dream begins in the evening, a time when the threshold of consciousness is lowered and the impulses and images of the unconscious can pass across it. In such a condition, when the feminine side of man is most easily evoked, it is natural to find that a female figure joins the four friends. She is the anima figure that belongs to them all, reserved and delicate, reminding Henry of his sister, and connects them all to each other. On the table stand three vessels of different character, which by their concave form accentuate the receptiveness that is symbolic of the feminine. The fact that these vessels are used by all present indicates a mutual and close relatedness among them. The vessels differ in form, liqueur glass, wine glass, and a classically formed container, and in the color of their contents. The opposites into which these fluids divide, sweet and bitter, red and yellow, intoxicating and sobering, are all intermingled through being consumed by each of the five persons present who sink into an unconscious communion. The girl seems to be the secret agent, the catalyst who precipitates events, for it is the role of the anima to lead a man into his unconscious and thus to force him to deeper recollection and increased consciousness. It is almost as though with the mixing of liqueur and tea the party would approach its climax. The second part of the dream tells us more of the happenings of this night. The four friends suddenly find themselves in Paris, which for the Swiss represents the town of sensuality, of uninhibited joy and love. Here a certain differentiation of the four takes place, especially between the ego in the dream, which is to a great extent identified with the leading thinking function, and the Président de la République, who represents the undeveloped and unconscious feeling function. The ego, Henry and two friends, who may be considered as representing his semi-conscious functions, looks down from the height of a balcony on the president, whose characteristics are exactly what one would expect to find in the undifferentiated side of the psyche. He is unstable and has abandoned himself to his instincts. He urinates on the street in a drunken state. He is unconscious of himself, like a person outside civilization, following only his natural animal urges. Thus, the president symbolizes a great contrast to the consciously accepted standards of a good middle-class Swiss scientist. Only in the darkest night of the unconscious could this side of Henry reveal itself. However, the president figure also has a very positive aspect. His urine, which could be the symbol of a stream of psychic libido, seems inexhaustible. It gives evidence of abundance, of creative and vital strength. Primitives, for instance, regard everything coming from the body, hair, excrement, urine, or saliva, as creative, as having magical powers. This unpleasant president image, therefore, could also be a sign of the power and plenty that often adheres to the shadow side of the ego. Not only does he urinate without embarrassment, but he runs after an old woman who is holding a child. This old spinster is in a way the opposite or complement of the shy, fragile anima of the first part of the dream. She is still a virgin, even though old and seemingly a mother. In fact, Henry associated her to the archetypal image of Mary with the child Jesus. But the fact that the baby is wrapped in a brown, earth-colored blanket makes it seem to be the sonic, earthbound counter-image of the Savior rather than a heavenly child. The president, who sprinkles the child with his urine, seems to perform a travesty of baptism. If we take the child as a symbol of a potentiality within Henry that is still infantile, then it could receive strength through this ritual. But the dream says nothing more. The woman hurries away with the child. This scene marks the turning point of the dream. It is morning again. Everything that was dark, black, primitive, and powerful in the last episode has been gathered together and symbolized by a magnificent Negro who appears naked, that is, real and true. Just as darkness and bright morning, or hot urine and cold snow, are opposites, so now the black man and the white landscape form a sharp antithesis. The four friends now must orient themselves within these new dimensions. Their position has changed. The way that led through Paris has brought them unexpectedly into French Switzerland, where Henry's fiancée came from. A transformation has taken place in Henry during the earlier phase, when he was overpowered by unconscious contents of his psyche. Now, for the last time, he can begin to find his way forward from a place that was his fiancée's home, showing that he accepts her psychological background. At the beginning, he went from eastern Switzerland to Paris, from the east to the west, where the way leads into darkness, the unconsciousness. He has now made a turn of 180 degrees toward the rising sun and the ever-increasing clarity of consciousness. This way points to the middle of Switzerland, to its capital, Bern, and symbolizes Henry's striving toward a center that would unite the opposites within him. The Negro is, for some people, the archetypal image of the dark primal creature, and thus a personification of certain contents of the unconscious. Perhaps this is one reason why the Negro is so often rejected and feared by people of the white race. In him, the white man sees his living counterpart, his hidden dark side brought before his eyes. This is just what most people try to avoid. They want to cut it off and repress it. White men project onto the Negro the primitive drives, the archaic powers, the uncontrolled instincts that they do not want to admit in themselves, of which they are unconscious, and that they therefore designate as the corresponding qualities of other people. For a young man of Henry's age, the Negro may stand on the one hand for the sum of all dark traits repressed into unconsciousness. On the other hand, he may represent the sum of his primitive masculine strength and potentialities, his emotional and physical power. That Henry and his friends intend consciously to confront the Negro signifies, therefore, a decisive step forward on the way to manhood. In the meantime, it has become noon, when the sun is at its highest and consciousness has reached its greatest clarity. We might say that Henry's ego has continued to become more and more compact, that he has enhanced his capacity consciously to make decisions. It is still winter, which may indicate a lack of feeling and warmth in Henry. His psychic landscape is still wintry and apparently intellectually very cold. The four friends are afraid that the naked Negro, being accustomed to a warm climate, might be frozen. But their fear turns out to be groundless, for after a long drive through deserted snow-covered country, they stop in a strange city and enter a dark house. This drive and the desolate country is symbolic of the long and wearisome search for self-development. A further complication awaits the four friends here. The Negro and his servant are mute. Therefore, it is not possible to make verbal contact with them. The four friends must seek other means to get in touch with the Negro. They cannot use intellectual means, words, but rather a feeling gesture to approach him. They offer him a present, as one gives an offering to the gods, to win their interest and their affection. And it has to be an object of our civilization, belonging to the values of the intellectual white man. Again, a sacrificium intellectus is demanded to win the favor of the Negro, who represents nature and instinct. Henry is the first to make up his mind what to do. This is natural, since he is the bearer of the ego, whose proud consciousness or hubris has to be humbled. He picks up a box of matches from the floor and presents it with deference to the Negro. At first glance, it may seem absurd that a small object lying on the floor, and probably thrown away, should be the proper gift, but this was the right choice. Matches are stored and controlled fire, a means by which a flame can be lit and put out at any time. Fire and flame